This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello and welcome to Savor. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about alligator.
Yes. Yes, we are. Because you didn't know you can eat alligator.
Absolutely.
Some of you might be questioning why, but we'll go into that. And just for like fun setup story, my cousin wrestled an alligator to save his dog a couple years ago.
Oh my goodness. Was the dog saved?
I like how you asked about the dog first.
Well, I mean,
yes.
I feel like you would have led off with your cousin coming to a tragic end.
I probably wouldn't have included the story.
Yeah, you're right.
Yes, both cousin and dog are okay. He does have a pretty massive, like, scarring on his side.
Like scratch or bite? Or
like bite.
Oh, dang.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a wrestler. He's a tall guy. Also, he lives in Florida, if you're wondering where he encountered this gator.
I figured it wasn't Atlanta. If it had been, something serious would have been wrong going on in Dahlonega. That's
fascinating, though.
Yeah.
Fascinating story. Also, because it keeps coming up, because I keep bringing it up, Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, there's a character called Snakebite Scruggs, who is a gator wrangler. And he's voiced by Mark Hamill.
If I didn't trust in you and Mark Hamill, I would start to think that you were making things up so that you could keep talking about Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
I mean, that's not below me, but this is true. And he's like one of my favorite characters because he's got a little grizzly voice, so tough. And, you know, gators everywhere. It's quite the film.
I believe you about that as well.
Perfect. I can't wait to watch it. Also, I happen to have a favorite alligator, and her name is Lefty.
Yeah?
And she lives in a national park in Gulf Shores, Alabama.
Oh.
She lost a paw.
Oh.
And the park rangers call her Lefty.
Well, I don't personally have a favorite alligator, but I'm glad you'll have to introduce me sometime.
Oh, I will. She's tough, though.
Mm-mm. Oh, I believe you.
You always want to keep a good distance.
Oh, I feel that way about most alligators.
I feel that way about most animals, honestly, but especially gators.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Alligators are, by the way, the state reptile of Florida, Louisiana, and Mississippi.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I'm relatively well acquainted with them. I did grow up for a while in South Florida. Also, I went to the University of Florida, the mascot of which is the gator.
The gators, yes. The big chopping eating
motion. Yeah, it is great to be a Florida gator, or so they told me. That's the chant that you chant.
I can feel the enthusiasm and school spirit.
I wasn't on the football team, so it's, yeah.
You didn't feel connected.
Yeah, I didn't have that much of a stake in it. Oh, personally. Sure.
Mm-hmm. My mom went to the other one in Florida.
Florida State University.
Yeah, so does that make us enemies? Are we rivals?
Yeah.
Oh, no. End of podcast. I must avenge my mom's school.
I always knew it would end like this.
Through state mascots and, like, we were not. I also wasn't into football, so I went to one game my entire college career. I did have fun.
Oh, I went to one as well. It was a homecoming game, which I think should count extra, but.
2 points.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Totally. Okay.
Yes.
Well, anyway.
My mom also went to Auburn, who has the same colors as the Florida Gators.
Oh.
Football intrigue abounds. Also, this headline.
Yeah.
Texas great-grandmother shoots 12-foot gator as revenge for killing mini horse.
Wow.
That is quite the headline to come up when you're researching a food podcast.
There was some strange reading for this episode.
Absolutely. And that brings us to our question. Alligator. What is it?
Yeah, this is a fun one.
Yes, it is.
I love these animal episodes because it's always like, what a completely fascinating and beautiful creature. It's also so tasty when you deep fry it.
Yeah. Oh. There's something very odd about reading of just, oh, wow, it's this huge, huge animal, but also it's in restaurants, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Respect where your food comes from.
Yes.
And, yes, so an alligator. It's a big old apex predator reptile. Long jaws, a long, thick body, and a long tail, all powerful, and better suited to water than land because its legs are a little bit stubby.
Yeah.
Stubby legs. There are two existing species of alligator. They're in the Crocodilia family, and the genus name is alligator. There's the Chinese species classification Alligator sinensis and the American classification Alligator mississippiensis. Yes.
I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. That American alligator can grow to about 8 to 15 feet and can weigh about 300 to 1,000 pounds.
Ooh.
For our metric friends, that's about 2.5 to 4.5 meters and 150 to 450 kilos. Not small.
No.
No. Bigger than me. The Chinese alligator is usually about half that size, and they usually, in general, live in the wild about 40 years, but have known to live to about twice that age in captivity.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Because they are reptiles, they have scales. The Chinese alligator has thick armored scales all over its body. The American is softer on its belly, and they lay eggs, and they are crap at regulating their body temperature. They tend to live in warm freshwater wetlands where they can sunbathe on land to warm up and then cool off in the water. In the States, that's mainly coastal areas of Texas through North Carolina, and they are opportunistic eaters, which I think also describes both of us.
I would agree.
In the case of alligators, it means they don't usually expend energy like actively hunting, but will just sort of wait kind of stealthily for prey to come along, whatever prey that might be.
Mm-hmm.
They have around 80 teeth. They don't chew with them, though. They just rip.
Yeah. Mm.
And their teeth will fall out and are replaced as they wear down. Terrifying.
Yeah.
They can also, I love this bit, they can store excess calories in the form of fat reserves at the base of their tails and thus survive for like up to 2 years without eating.
That's like the long con of waiting somebody out. Like 2 years, they'll get comfortable.
Right.
But then I strike.
Oh, man, I feel like you just really felt, like, seen by that alligator fact.
Maybe. I do, like, a good revenge tale. If that is not a bad horror movie, it needs to be.
Ooh. Yeah. All right, get on it.
It's like Jaws, you know, where, like, the son or daughter of Jaws, and the next movie is like, I will avenge ye. Just like that.
Exactly like
that. But we need it with gators.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very important.
One of my favorite facts. Male gators announce they are ready to mate with a bellow.
A bellow. A very serious bellow.
Yes.
I don't know if we can get one for the show, but if we if we can find one, it's going to go right here. But yeah, no, they like alligators definitely chatter with each other.
Yes, they're social creatures. This is the best research.
Yeah, they're one of the only reptiles that actively cares for their young for like 2 years after hatching. And other than the biggest males and females, which tend to be solitary, they often hang out in groups called congregations.
Aww. Mm-hmm. But they also eat sharks. Like smaller sharks, but they eat sharks. So now we get a crossover movie, right? We've got Revenge Gator and Revenge Shark.
Ooh.
Crossover potential is very important when you're trying to sell a movie these days. That's what I hear.
I think we should not even air this part. We should keep this just for ourselves.
Because no one would have thought of this before. This is a golden goose laid by you and I. Well, I would watch that movie. I'd be ashamed of myself after, probably, but
no,
I'd watch it.
That's okay. You know, as long as there's good snacks.
That's true.
Ooh, menu plan. Okay. I cannot plan a menu for this movie that does not exist. hunting alligators tends to be restricted in the United States, and it's generally illegal in China where they are endangered. Most alligator meat comes from farmed alligators. Often eggs are collected from wild nests and then hatched and raised on gator ranches, which is a great phrase. The egg collection is also restricted. I mean, not that I think that most people would, like, get it into their heads to go knock over a gator nest for funsies, but
I hope not.
Goodness, no. Laws do differ by state, but farmers who collect wild eggs generally have to release a certain percentage of hatchlings back into the wild once they're a couple years old.
The gators eaten in restaurants are usually farm-raised and 2 to 4 feet long, about 1 meter, when they're killed. But some folks hunt gators up to 13 feet long, almost 4 meters, and freeze the meat and eat it all year long. In Louisiana, you have to have a license and tags to hunt gator in the state legally. Part of the license requires that you harvest all gators that you catch. If you don't sell it, non-commercial hunters are only permitted to hunt during the month of September. The meat is often salted and preserved, and skin is used in boots, belts, and wallets.
In Florida, gators caught south of the portion of I-75 that runs east to west across the top of the Everglades, gators caught south of that cannot legally be sold for meat because of the mercury levels in the water.
Ooh.
Thanks, humans. That portion of I-75, by the way, is generally called Alligator Alley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And some alligator ranches also function as tourist spots. Yes, you can pet baby gators there. Yes, I have done that.
Well, did you have the time of your life?
Anytime that I get to pet an animal, it's my best day.
Yes.
And especially, like, I really love reptiles because they're so smooth.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, the word alligator comes from the Spanish word el lagarto, meaning the lizard. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. And if we're talking about the taste, like chicken, pretty much.
Yeah. You've had alligator, right?
I have. Most times it has been fried and chicken-like. Maybe a bit tougher or gamier.
Yeah.
And I've read that in texture, it's like dark chicken meat. But in taste, it's more like white meat. I saw it described in Food and Wine as a love child between grouper and chicken. And I did have blackened alligator tail in Savannah, and I would agree. I would agree with that assessment.
Yeah. Sort of like a springier, flakier chicken, kind of.
Yeah.
I think I've only ever had it like fried in like little like alligator bite like nugget forms.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. I've read that it can be a lot like a veal.
Oh, really?
If you're into that.
Hmm.
There's a few cuts of alligator meat that are popular. The tail contains these four cylinders of muscles running down the length of it, sometimes called tenderloins, which can be sliced crossways into cutlets. There's a cut from the back of the body, like up behind the legs, sometimes called the sirloin. The cheeks can be eaten like you would pork or fish jowls. The forelegs are eaten, called wings. They look like thicker chicken wing flats.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. And there's meat on the ribs.
In Louisiana, alligator is eaten in stew, sautéed, grounded to sausage. I feel like you and Ben had alligator jerky on snack stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it tasted like jerky.
Is that, like, generally the consensus? Because you had a lot of types of jerky on that show.
Yeah, Jonathan Strickland brought us, like, a batch of weird jerkies one time, and it was just jerky for days. Like, there was, I mean, but yeah, at a certain point, I think this one did have a little bit more of that texture that I'm talking about, that kind of, like, springiness.
Mm.
But once you put jerky seasoning into something, that's the flavor.
It's jerky.
Yeah.
Well, people do eat it in all these various ways. A restaurant we didn't get to go to but was highly recommended to us while we were in New Orleans, Giacomo's. I was looking at their menu, and there's something on there called alligator cheesecake.
I am equal parts dubious and curious.
I'm so interested in what that is.
Apparently, around New Orleans, many families have a personal horseradish sauce recipe to accompany their family gator meals. I've heard tell of alligator sushi.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Wow.
I don't know if it was raw or cooked.
Hmm. Well, if anyone knows, please write in.
Yeah.
In Florida, I read the most popular part of the gator is the ribs.
Over in China, alligators are associated with myths about like fierce but benevolent earth dragons. Some historians think that alligators were a basis of some of these myths. And alligator meat is thought by some to have positive health benefits for those associative reasons. It is rarely eaten these days because the species is endangered, but when it is, it might show up as steaks in rice bowls or in soups.
Yep. And what about the nutrition?
Alligator is it's a pretty good meat. It's super high in protein, pretty low in fat and cholesterol. And that's because, unlike in mammals, which tend to have fat marbled through the muscle, the fat in alligator is mostly between the muscles and the skin. 3 ounces of a tail cut has 39 grams of protein and only 4 grams of fat.
Hmm.
So if that's a dietary thing that you're looking for, then yeah.
There you go. If we look at the numbers, the American alligator was once on the endangered species list, but now holds the no concern label. Louisiana produces the most alligator meat in the United States, and demand for gator has gone up in the past several years, doubling the price from about $6 a pound to about $13 a pound. Perhaps more so than most other meats, it suffers during economic hardships outside of that region.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, and keep in mind that $6 to $13 a pound, that's wholesale. Gator meat can cost upwards of $20 a pound retail. But yes, very volatile market. And the market for alligator skin goes hand in hand with gator meat because it's bigger. The alligator skin market is bigger. Hide can go for $20 to $40 per foot.
Oof.
As of 2015, the 17 farms in Florida sold $1.7 million in meat and $6.8 million in hides. During the recession in the 20-aughts, some farmers stopped collecting eggs to hatch entirely because the market for leather dipped so hard as the market for luxury goods was dipping.
Right. Gator is a popular choice during Lent as an okay meat option for Fridays because it counts as seafood, which really cracks me up, I guess.
I mean, they live in the water a bunch.
Yeah.
I guess.
It was up for some debate, so much so that the Archbishop of New Orleans was asked about it in a letter penned in 2010, and he responded thusly, "Yes, the alligator's considered in the fish family, and I agree with you." According to the writer, God has created a magnificent creature that is important to the state of Louisiana, and it is considered seafood.
Well, there you have it.
Archbishop.
Can't argue.
And it is a fun rabbit hole the planning restaurants have to do in Catholic communities around increasing demand for seafood during Lent. New Orleans is just about the best place to be during Lent, which is supposed to be about deprivation. In the words of the Archbishop, quite frankly, and I can say this because I'm from New Orleans, having to fulfill this law or this guideline of abstinence of meat on Fridays is no sacrifice whatsoever. That's the reality of it.
In Louisiana, over 300,000 alligators are harvested every year, valued at some $33 million.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Seeing alligator on menus outside of the South is somewhat of a rarity, though. And because of that, it is sometimes described as one of the last truly local foods, which I kind of enjoy.
Yeah, yeah.
But the alligator has a long and interesting history.
Yes, and we will get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. Just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes, unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so the alligator, the specific species, has been around about 150 million years.
Oh.
Yeah, they outlasted their dinosaur relatives.
Okay, well, good for them.
Yeah, so pretty old. They're doing a pretty good job surviving. Eating alligator, though, is a bit more recent. And as you might imagine from the creature's terrifying visage, is born of necessity.
I've actually read from a former alligator poacher that it is easier to run an alligator ranch than a cattle ranch. But that being said, nah, like alligator would not be my first choice if I saw like a lineup of animals.
Right. Yeah. Nope, me either.
No. Native Americans in what is now northern Florida were hunting and eating alligator a long time before Europeans got over here, maybe like 4,000 years or so. The Timucua, living along the northeastern coast of the Gulf of Mexico, would smoke gator to preserve it. And I read a Louisiana Choctaw legend about alligator. And can we do a little legend break?
Always.
Cool. Okay, yeah. So the tale is about this hunter who comes upon an alligator dying of thirst, and he helps the alligator get to water. And afterward, the gator tells him how to hunt deer. You know, like, don't go for the young ones, don't go for the mothers, but the ones that were old and had lived useful lives. There's an emphasis in the story on greeting and thanking the animals, and that giving the hunter greater power. And the story ends with the hunter telling this story to his people, and it says that those who understood the alligator's wisdom and followed its teachings would become great hunters and never go hungry.
That's a pretty good legend break.
Yeah.
European settlers were most likely eating alligator in Louisiana in the 1800s. It was being consumed in the southern United States by the mid-1800s, for sure. At one time, alligator meat was believed to be medicinal, and it still is by some, particularly for asthma and the common cold. The scales were once thought to cure syphilis.
As European colonists forced Native Americans in what's now southern Florida down into the Everglades in the 1800s, those Native Americans learned to hunt alligators, too. Those were the Seminole and Miccosukee tribes, and yeah, they learned to hunt alligators and incorporated them into their cuisine. The traditional methods that they developed to catch alligators are sometimes performed for tourists to this day. It's sold as being alligator wrestling, but I mean, it's really just like, alligator, don't bite me. That's basically what it is. I mean, it's very impressive. I don't mean to, like, undersell.
Oh, no.
Like, this is a thing that I have also seen.
I'm, like, legitimately nervous, and
yes.
I'm on land
yep.
thinking about even this thing.
Like, four floors up, like, in a, yes. in a sound booth.
Like, somehow I'm going to turn around, there's a gator looking in the window of our studio. he does, like, with his stubby paw, points at his eyes, points at us.
I think we're safe for now.
Oh, good.
Colonists in Florida started hunting alligator as game and for their hides as well a bit later in the 1800s. And this started to be when alligator populations started dwindling.
Yeah.
And that was exacerbated when alligator skin became a really hot fashion trend in France in the late 1850s. And then further again, when the Confederates turned to alligator leather for shoes and saddles during the Civil War. This is also around when industrial leather tanning technology developed. So the boom on alligator skin was driven by that as well. It was kind of like a gators were in the wrong place, wrong time kind of thing.
Yeah. Some folks were eating alligator eggs by the 1900s. And this brings us to one of the most super depressing parts of this episode. All right. An article from the Washington Times published in 1908 came with a story about a zookeeper in New York who sent two black children into an enclosure of 25 alligators and crocodiles, purportedly to the entertainment of the patrons and to lead the reptiles to a different enclosure. In the words of the zookeeper, the gator had, quote, Epicurean fondness for the black man. There's no indication in the article that the zookeeper ever faced any punishment or any negative language around his actions at all. Time magazine reported on a similar thing in 1923 Florida, black babies being used as bait for hunters looking to kill some alligators with no intention of saving the children. The Miami New Times had a similar article, and in 1919, the Richmond Times-Dispatch reported on it with more concern for the alligators than the children. An alligator eating a black baby was a float in a 1902 parade in St. Louis. And some historians read these as jokes. But even so, that's pretty despicable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the worst. It is hard to say whether these were real events that happened or just particularly cruel fictions that were designed for white audiences with ugly thoughts about people of color. During this period of American history, like, really unblinking racism was considered fashionably titillating in some circles. It's where some stuff like a lot of H.P. Lovecraft's work comes from, which, you know, has many admirable qualities, but it's also just racist AF.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that.
There's that. Back to alligator populations. By 1962, the population of wild alligators was so low in the United States, less than 100,000, that Florida outlawed hunting them. A national law would be passed in 1967. And those laws, it's considered one of the most successful wildlife preservation attempts ever. By 1987, alligators were removed from the endangered species list. And the following year, Florida began issuing limited hunting licenses. Limited. Funds from the permits do go towards gator conservation, and the population in Florida is now over 1.3 million.
That's pretty decent.
Yeah. Over in China, by the 1990s, the hunting of alligators for food and as vermin, as farms started encroaching on their wetlands, hit a really scary peak. The largest population at the time was a single pond that had 11 alligators that was surrounded by rice paddies and a video rental shop.
Wow.
Yeah. There were fewer than 130 alligators total in the wild.
Oof.
With work, there are now larger populations in captivity, but they are still considered endangered. There's about 10,000 total, with more being hatched every year, though there are concerns with such a small pool of inbreeding causing genetic problems down the line.
Yeah, sure.
By 2006, though, some restaurants had started serving limited amounts of farm-raised alligator in China.
Huh. Anyone in China, write in. Let us know.
Yeah, yeah. It was apparently like a big, like, kind of fashion, like, ooh.
Right.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back in the States, Katrina's damage to Louisiana wetlands did severely impact wild alligator breeding grounds. The oil spill wouldn't help either.
No. And then, for some mysterious reason, the History Channel has a series called Swamp People, about people in Louisiana who hunt gators. Lots of not-so-great things happened on that show, including a cast member getting arrested for selling alligator meat illegally. It's been called out by Dominic Monaghan, no less.
Okay.
But others, too, for glorifying the killing of animals and demonizing alligators.
It started in 2010, and yeah, it's still running?
I guess.
During perhaps its peak popularity around 2013 to 2015, it drove popularity and prices of alligator meat like way up, like prices doubled.
Wow.
In that 2 year period. And a few other related shows have popped up as well. Gator Boys on Animal Planet starting in 2012 and Growing Up Gator in 2014.
See, I would love if Growing Up Gator was about like being in a UF. Family, University of Florida. And then, but you know you can't, you don't want to go there, and it's all a big lie. And you have to find out the way to tell your family.
See, I would watch that show.
That sounds like a good show. not none of this nonsense.
In 2015, amid that boom, some alligator ranches experienced theft.
What?
Gator crime.
What?
Thieves stole some 1,100 eggs in a single heist, worth around $66,000.
Oh, my goodness. Food heist.
We need to do a whole, like, mini-series on food heists.
I am in.
In 2017, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission revealed a 2-year undercover sting to catch poachers, mostly of alligators, but other wild and protected species as well. They wound up arresting 9 people, including racketeering charges, like criminal organization.
Whoa.
For 4 of those people. One of the defendants said that the sting didn't even scratch the surface.
What?
But others say that the worst of the charged crimes were only committed because the undercover officers, like, goaded them into it, like entrapment.
Oh.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. I haven't read a follow-up, but intrigue.
I know. So much intrigue. Huh. Kind of reminds me of The Rescuers Down Under. That's with crocodiles, but there's that whole poacher thing. I happened to just watch that very recently, so it's fresh on my brain. Oh, man. In 2018, a claim by a gator hunter and chef that gators were destroying the wetlands and thus hunting them was a good thing was debunked. I bring it up because it circulated enough that there is a Snopes entry about it, you know, popped up in a lot of the results.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in certain areas, certainly, I think that they can be considered, like, vermin, like, that need to be controlled.
But, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, well, This has been quite... We have covered a lot of ground in this episode.
We have. Oh, goodness.
We've got a little bit more for you, but first we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. For just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport too. Is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
And we're back with
Listener Mail!
That's how they sound like.
I'm sure. This is a documentary, you guys.
I don't know why we just didn't do the bellow ourselves earlier. Clearly, we know what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Peggy wrote, I was born and raised in South Louisiana. I am loving the series based in New Orleans. I didn't learn how to make gumbo until after I married the first time. My ex-mother-in-law is a Cajun. Granny, as we call her, makes the best gumbo in the world. She doesn't cook with a recipe, but it always tastes the same. Delicious. To me, gumbo always tastes better the second day. The flavor seems to intensify, so when I do make it, it is always the day before. We also like to serve gumbo with potato salad. I like to eat a little potato salad in my gumbo. I know Granny makes her roux in a black cast iron skillet and adds it to her water. 10 minutes before she serves her gumbo, she snips green onion tops and chopped fresh parsley. I now live in Minnesota and brought my Cajun cooking skills with me.
Oh.
That sounds so good.
It does. Mm. Oh. Janelle wrote, I just listened to your episode on Kit Kat bars, which, by the way, are my very favorite chocolate bar, but only the classic four-finger bar. You revealed that the inner choco layer is in fact partly made up of ground-up Kit Kat bars that didn't make the cut for sale. That reminded me of my summer job during undergrad, where I worked at a wafer cookie factory. A wafer cookies are those rectangular cookies that have three layers of a wafer with two layers of a sugary cream-like filling, and the common flavors are vanilla, strawberry, or chocolate. They are not exciting cookies, and that always disappointed people when they heard what type of cookie factory I was working in at the time. So I'm a little disturbed to find out that Kit Kats, my favorite chocolate bar, are basically the same thing. Anyway, for those wafer cookies, like Kit Kat bars, there was a certain amount of what was termed regrind. Ooh, that was mixed in the filling part. The regrind would be from wafer cookies where the layers had separated, had bubbles, were cut wrong, or packaged wrong, and could not be sold. There was an entire job that consisted of going around all day long, gathering up all of the unsatisfactory wafer cookies, grinding them up, and delivering them to the bakers to include in the mixing. I thought it was really gross when I started working there, but I got used to it really fast. And, yes, we were allowed to eat unlimited cookies while at work, although for me, that only lasted a couple of days at the start of each summer.
What a fun, interesting summer job.
Right?
Wafer cookie factory.
Yeah.
I love that it's somebody's entire task is, like, walk around and find these unsatisfactory cookies.
Yeah. And I love that, like, this kind of cookie cannibalism is, like, a known factor.
I know.
In cookie making.
Cookie cannibalism. What a way to put it. Well, thanks to both of them for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all of which our handle is @saverpod. That was an awkward sentence. Thank you for getting through it with me.
You're welcome.
We do hope to hear from you. Thank you, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thank you to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ+ bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.